Good morning, evening, everyone, and welcome to my show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and thank you so much for joining us this evening. And we are going to be talking about domestic abuse. You know, we're going to be talking about people and adults and children, you know, babies, mothers, wives, cousins, uncles, aunts. You know, I really think that's important to talk about everybody, because I think everyone, if you are not the person doing the act, the receiver of the act, you may be the observer or the enabler of domestic abuse. You know, that's very, very important to know. Because if you're observing this, is this really where it needs to be for you? You know, the show will emphasize today domestic abuse, but, you know, I really think it's not the word abuse. It's really something that encounters all areas of living and interacting with others, and it reflects the violent disrespect for another person. So today my guest is Amy Sherman, and we'll be talking specifically about domestic abuse in the holidays, and we welcome you. If you would like to call in today, please do. And she also has a master's degree in counseling and psychology. She's a director of mental health services at the Toby Center for Family Transitions, and she offers coaching services. So she will definitely be able to give us a lot of information about what and how she helps others that do have these issues. If you'd like to call in, the guest call-in number is 424-258-9318, and be sure to push 1 so I'll be able to know that you'd like to speak. So welcome, Amy, to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette. Appreciate it.
You know, we talk so much about the holidays and, you know, people being around and how things are happening, and we don't even realize that domestic abuse is so difficult of an issue around the holidays. So I would love for you to share with us about your experience and your center first, and then we'll start talking about your thoughts on this.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, the holidays are difficult whether or not you are experiencing any kind of abusive situation. It's still a lot of stress, a lot of overwhelm, a lot of frustration. People experience disappointment if they don't get what they want or if people don't do what they want. There's anger and all kinds of other emotions that are very common. Dr. Jeanette and I were talking earlier about how kids are around during the holiday season. They have 2 weeks off generally. There's a lot more stress in the home. You know, ultimately what we're looking for, what we want to talk about today, is how to create peace in the home. How can we restore a balance and harmony in the home during this time of year when there is so much going on? I am the director of mental health services for the Toby Center, which is a facility for families that are going through transitions of divorce or separation. We focus on the welfare of the child during this transition so that they are not as negatively impacted as they could possibly be during this horrible experience that their parents are going through. We work on empowering the parents, teaching parents good parenting skills so that they do not impose their anger and resentments on their children. And all of that, you know, while you don't think of that as abusive or being a domestic abuse situation, it is really considered emotionally abusive when somebody is doing or saying something about another person and causing the children, for instance, to be caught in between their parents who they love dearly. So what I'd like to talk about today with you, Dr. Jeanette, is, you know, how we could help the kids, how we could help the parents, how we can help everybody during this, especially this time of year, and also any other time of year when there's a lot of stress going on and difficulties in coping.
Well, you know, just like I said in the beginning, you know, if you're not the person who's actually performing the act, you know, or if you're not the person who is receiving it, you definitely know people or you have seen or heard it. It's, I mean, people are in such close quarters these days. It's not like, you know, you live on a farm and you're 2 miles away from the other one, so you don't know what's going on in that house, you know. I mean, you can drive down the street and see people yelling and screaming at each other. Or, you know, you can see people, you know, kids coming out of cars or being dragged around in grocery stores and stuff. You know what I mean? We really have to, I guess, maybe look at what is the definition of abuse. What does that mean? Does that mean I'm doing discipline and this is the way I'm doing it and you don't like it? Or, you know, who has rights anymore to be able to even use a definition of the word abuse to be attached to you? It's like, and you know, it's like there's something like you just don't want it. It's sort of like abuse is like, it's almost like a mental health code that you don't want attached to you, or, you know, or a medical condition that you just don't want attached to you. So you kind of like are skirting around. I mean, like I've said before, I almost feel like domestic abuse is like a snake in the grass, you know? It's just, it's always there. It's just that it's elusive to you. And every time you go near it will change its colors. It's like chameleon. So what do you think?
You know, well, most people I used to run a domestic abuse program for 6 years, and I worked with the women and men and teenagers who were in, you know, who were caught in the cycle of violence or just abuse, because it doesn't have to be a violent home in order to be abusive. It's, you know, emotional abuse is part of it as well. When, you know, the definition of domestic violence or abuse is any behavior that uses physical, emotional, or sexual tactics to maintain control over their victim. And usually the victim is an intimate partner or somebody that you know, within the family. So children obviously could be abused as well. It encompasses, you know, when I talk about physical, obviously if somebody is being beaten, that's physical abuse. But what is emotional abuse? You know, that's that the verbal, the name-calling, the belittling, the humiliating, you know, making the person feel crazy. You know, that's the emotional abuse, and it comes in so many different forms. And then, of course, there's sexual abuse, where a woman or a man is forced to do stuff they don't want to do, and just because you're married to somebody doesn't mean you have to do, you know, certain acts. If you feel uncomfortable with it, then it's abusive. And the other person ignores that then it's abusive. And then the final form of abuse would be economic abuse, where you are not, you don't have control of your money. You have to either beg or ask for an allowance or some money to spend some to buy things. I had a client who used to have to save her stubs from Publix, you know, her receipts,
right,
and show it to her husband every time she went to Publix. And he used to give her, like, I don't know, a certain amount of money, and she had to account for it. Now, that's abusive. You know, when you go into a marriage or a partnership, you know, it's an equal partnership. And if one person creates a dominance over another person, that's abusive. So, you know, you were talking about the definition of abuse. It really is very finite. It's you know, it could encompass so many things. But most women, when they come into a program, aren't even aware that they really, really are abused. They just figure they have a bad relationship. But they really don't know that it's really abuse that they're experiencing.
And, you know, and I think that's so true, too, because now that there's been so many life issues, like not having money, or I'm stressed because I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job when I come home, you know, people are giving excuses to poor behavior, you know, instead of trying to figure it out or saying, you know, I'm going to lock the door and you're going to sit outside for an hour and cool down, you know. Now, that's not abuse. Mm-hmm. That's just telling them they need to cool down so you don't have the problem. But, you know, so many people are, many more people, I think, are starting to experience the issues, and it's getting on this fine line. It almost feels like everybody's on pins and needles. You know, am I abusive? Am I not? You know, it depends which way the wind blows that day. You know, and I think that's
true.
Well,
you know, I don't even think people are aware of to even use that word. I think that they just feel they're, you know, they're caught up in a bad marriage. You know, why do bad marriages happen to nice people, kind of thing. You know, I'm a nice person. Why is he treating me this way? And it's, you know, it's just that the relationship is so unequal. The relationship is so skewed where one person feels, I know better. I know what's right. Let me be in control. You know, when you look at, I'm sure you're aware of the power and control wheel that's so common. Maybe some of the listeners aren't. But there are so many different tactics that are used, and, you know, by an abuser. And, you know, one in five women are abused. 20% of the population of women have been abused, have seen abuse, know somebody who is abused. About 15% of men, probably even more now, are being abused by their wives. And I've had a support group with men who are being abused by their wives where they were so, and most of it is emotional abuse, although sometimes the women get a little physical. In general, it's the, either case, it's bad because it's a relationship where your marriage, your partnership is so unequal and so, controlled by another person that the other person feels so intimidated, coerced, threatened that they can't even live their lives. And that's not, you know, that's not creating a healthy relationship. It's not showing your children what's healthy. It's certainly not creating peace and harmony in the household. And, unless you're aware that you're experiencing this, you're not going to know what to do about it.
Well, you know, I really think, too, a lot of people say, I'll do what I want in my own house, in my own car, in my own garage, whatever, and other people aren't going to know about it. But yeah. I can tell you from experiencing this with clients and families, believe me, people know what's going on. And if they don't, they're just, if they say, well, I don't know what's going on, they're lying. Because for whatever reason, they don't want to be able to have a part in it. They don't want to be dragged into it. But then again, you look at it, well, you know, are they really helping the situation by being an enabler to, you know, if they're a friend or a relative? And then you also look at the part, am I allowing someone else to actually potentially maybe, you know, have serious harm just by me sitting here and saying, I'm going to close my eyes, I'm going to live a life of blinders.
Yeah, well, a lot of people don't know what to do. That's the thing. Unless you know that there are options for you, you know, certainly there are. You could report to the police that you suspect abuse, and the police, you know, and you don't have to identify yourself. The police will go and investigate. And, of course, that could cause more problems for the actual people who are involved, you know, the family that is involved. But at least it's opening up the doors. If you are a victim of abuse, you could call the police and let them know that you are, you know, being abused. And even, you know, the problem with the police system, the criminal system, is that there has to be proof. You know, unless you're being beaten and have scars all over your body, emotional abuse is not considered anything illegal. So, you know, you could call up and say, my husband is, you know, keeping money from me, or my husband is, you know, calling me a stupid, you know, and that's not going to, you know. But what it does do is that they make a report. And if there's enough reports, because ultimately what generally does happen is that a household that starts off with emotional abuse will ultimately wind up being physically abusive. You know, there will be some violence. And if there has been a whole series of reports that the police, you know, see, then they will, you know, it'll mean something and it'll look better in the court system. But if you know somebody who is being abused, it's, you know, confront that person. Tell them, I'm here to help you. If you need a safe house, go to me because I will support you. And let them know that you are at least there for them. It's very important because these people isolate themselves so much and they don't realize that there is help out there. You know, with friends or neighbors or whoever, you know.
You know, I think there's there's so much help sometimes, you know, when they say, well, we'll give food stamps or we'll give rental assistance, but there's not really any help that says no matter what, if you need it, come in here and stand here, you know. You have to go through so much red tape anymore that, you know, that might be the more, I guess, you would spend a better dime or dollar on helping people through that versus, you know, always catching up in the back end when something happens, you know?
Yeah. It does take a lot of red tape to get, you know, the court system to do something. You know, if you get a protection order against, you know, the abuser, I mean, they're not allowed to be, you know, 50 feet, 100 feet away. You know, they can't call you, they can't contact you, they can't email you. They do it anyway. You know, they're supposed to be arrested. You know, it's not
I'm telling you,
Yeah,
you know,
I've seen
people. The husband would stand on the other, you know, on the edge of the sidewalk saying he's not on the property.
I've seen it.
And the kids and the mother standing inside the house, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You see it all the time, you know.
Sure.
Or, you know, they'll say, I'm in my car. That's 50 feet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The distance between the inside of my car to outside and the distance to outside or inside yours, I'm still 50 feet.
Yeah.
And the manipulation that they can go through, I think.
Big-time manipulators, yes. And they're also, you know, so many women have told me, my husband is so charming with everyone outside of the home.
Right.
Because these men know that if they're this way or violent outside the home, the people are going to say something and do something. But
right.
outside the home, they're charmers. Everybody likes them. They have tons of friends. They're cordial, they're friendly, they're, you know, all the positive qualities. And inside the home, they're terrors. They're, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I mean, they got
a
sports car and big muscles, and when you go in their house, there's holes all over the walls.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, I've
and,
seen
and, you know, just to yeah, I'm sure you have. And, you know, and another thing with children, you know, in a home that's violent, you know, what is the child learning? You know, first and foremost that, you know, my home is not safe, you know. And, you know, we want our home to be our safe haven. We want to be able to go home from school and be happy that we're home, you know, see mommy and daddy and everybody kisses and hugs. But if you're afraid to go home because your home is violent or it's abusive emotionally, you know, so what kind of security does a poor child have? The other thing is that what happens when a young child wakes up in the morning and they see mom is all bruised, you know, and mom says, oh, I banged my head against the wall or, you know, I fell down the stairs by mistake or whatever, you know, she says.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are not stupid. You know, they know that something happened. They know that dad has a violent temper. Something went on and, you know, it's, you know, something bad has happened to mommy. I don't know exactly what, but I don't like it and I'm scared. So these children become hypervigilant. You know, they're a little more excitable, you know, and of course they obviously they have problems in school and making friends, and ultimately they will become violent people as well. So there's so many repercussions, you know, because of the violence in the home. Excuse me. And unless the parents are aware and are willing to make some changes, you know, it's a cycle that just continues generation to generation.
I think also though that there are people that do get out of this cycle, and there is ways to get out of it. Granted, we've been talking about, you know, police and, you know, and then there's also shelters where you could physically get away from it, but there are other ways that you can get help and be in that middle part where maybe some therapy or whatever might help some of the family members. And then there's also somewhere, okay, we recognize that this won't continue. So, I mean, you really have a what I call the ticker from left to right, you know, how far on the extreme
mm-hmm.
are you and how do you need to get back into the space that you should be in?
Yeah. Well, it's a matter of, first of all, being aware of what your situation is. You know, many women are in denial. You know, here they are in a relationship and they have children. They're financially, you know, maybe dependent. They're embarrassed because their relationship is not a good one and maybe, you know, their family makes them feel guilty. You know, they also feel guilty, you know, that their kids are going to, you know, perhaps the kids will be raised without two parents. You know, they don't have alternatives to, you know, where they could go. So there's a lot of reasons why women stay. And even if a woman should leave, she will come back seven times. That's the statistics. They go back in the relationship seven times before they really leave permanently. And even if they do leave, it's very dangerous after they leave because that's when a lot of the violence happens with these estranged, you know, you read it in the paper all the time, estranged woman,
right.
You know, was killed by her husband. But there is help. And so once a woman realizes this is her situation and she wants out, what she needs to do, obviously, is go for therapy, some counseling, some support where she learns the dynamics of abuse and what it's doing to her, because many times the relationship itself will chip away at her self-esteem, so she doesn't feel empowered enough to be able to get out on her own and make a, you know, change her life. She feels caught and stuck. And what she needs to understand is that, you know, unless she empowers, and I use that word, you know, very strongly, because a woman who doesn't feel like she can make a difference in her life won't be able to. So she has to empower herself. And that's, you know, through therapy, you know, to build her self-esteem and understand what her options are. And then she can leave. And, of course, she has to do it safely. You know, when I work with a woman who is leaving her home, I always, you know, plan out a safety plan with her so that she knows where she could go to be safe and you know, and her children as well. So there are options. You know, in terms of the abuser as well, there are options for him as well. But statistics are not as great for
right.
abusive men, because a lot of times they say, well, this is not my fault. I'm not, you know, it's her fault. She's the one who made me be angry. She's the one who, you know, so they put blame on everybody else, and they do not take responsibility for their own behavior. Some men are a little more cognizant of what they're doing, and they are willing to change. But if they're court-ordered to go into an anger management group or some kind of a domestic violence program, unless they want to do it themselves, they're just going to go through the motions and not make any personal changes. So it's real important for the abuser to understand, you know, what they're doing. My sister Rosalind put together an anger management program that is court-ordered for people who are in these kinds of relationships to have to take. It's an 8-hour or a 12-hour program, and, you know, it's very effective. It has you know, wonderful material on how to basically how to bring awareness to what you're doing and how it's impacting your family, especially your children, you know, and what you're doing, you know, in their lives and your spouse's lives.
Can you give us some information, the websites of your sister and yourself, and how we would be able to find out that information and about any books and any other support? So if somebody's listening to this right now, where can I find answers, and how can I get that, like, now?
Okay. Online parenting, let me just see, programs. Let me just make sure I got the right, yes. Onlineparentingprograms.com is where the anger management programs are. There are also co-parenting classes, divorce classes, parenting skills classes. So it's a whole website filled with very great information on how you could help change the dynamic of your household. Again, we're talking peace in the home. You know, everybody wants,
right.
The goal of everyone is to have a peaceful, loving home. How, you know, why not? You know, and here
mm-hmm.
are some programs that you can sign up for. The anger management is 8 hours and 12 hours, as I said, so it's available on onlineparentingprograms.com. There are also, you know, my sister and I did some programs for singles and relationships and how to create your ideal relationship. And you could find some information about that on womendatingrescue.com.
And your sister's name is Rosalind Sadaka.
Rosalind Sadaka. Yes, I'm sorry. And I also have on my website, I do have a baby boomers website. This is for people 40, 50, 60 years old. It has all kinds of information regarding challenges. I have a teen program that I put together for parents whose teenagers are giving them some trouble. It's in if your teen is acting out parenting program, it can be found at your baby boomers network. .com. And there's also, another program that I put together. It's Distress-Free Aging Transformation Package, and it has all kinds of information to help empower you, work on your self-esteem so that you could create your best life. You know, once the adults are doing well in the household, then the rest of the family will do well as well. You know,
it's
because
like
if a parent
default.
Is not... Well, you have to. You know, if a parent
yeah.
knows how to do better and feel better, then the
mm-hmm.
kids are going to feel better and do better. Your partner is going to feel better and do better, you know. So you have to really work on yourself. So the Distress-Free Aging Transformation Package covers all of those aspects on how you could really work on yourself so that you're feeling good and doing well, so that the rest of the people in your life will appreciate it and reap the rewards. And that's also found on yourbabyboomersnetwork.com. So those are some of the products and programs that I have, as well as coaching to help people work through some of their challenges and transitions that they're going through. You know, everybody needs help. It's hard sometimes to do it to do things alone, you know, because you don't know what direction, what options there are, you know, how you can handle this or that. It's always good to have somebody who's, you know, a little more objective to kind of guide you through some of your biggest challenges, and so that's what I would help, you know, you do.
I think so many times, too, when people are afraid to speak out is when you really get caught in the trick bag, because you wait until, you know, your cup is overflowing and you really, you can't get it out. And then you might get it out incorrectly. You may cause a little more drama than you need. And then you may not even get the correct help that you need. And in some cases, I have seen it, that it gets turned around and you end up being the person who gets in trouble instead of the other person, because of maybe you were just so out of it and so, caught up in it so much that you weren't able to communicate correctly. Have you ever seen that? I have seen that.
Oh, all the time. You know, misunderstandings, you know. You're trying to help somebody and do well by somebody, and then you say or do something, and it's totally misconstrued. And, you know, and you get in trouble, and, you know, you were doing your best. You were trying your best, but it just didn't come out the way you wanted. And that's, you know, I mean, we all need to understand that we make mistakes. Everybody, nobody is infallible. You know, we're going to make mistakes. So if we own up to it, and that's the difference between people who are, I'm going to put this in quotes, normal, and people who are not normal.
Right.
You know, people who have abusive personalities have a very difficult time owning up to their behavior. They do a lot of blaming. They accuse. They say, you know, that, you know, it wasn't my fault, and, it, you know, I didn't do that, but you made me and you did this. They have difficulty understanding that, you know, hey, you can make a mistake, and there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, I think, you know, I used to wonder, you know, when I would talk to some of the women that were abused, wonder, where are these men coming from? Why is it that they're so set in their ways and so manipulative? And it has to do with extremely low self-esteem. In order for them to really feel good about themselves, they just have to make somebody else feel worse. And, you know, it's there's like a template of their kinds of behavior. You could put them into a category of, you know, like there are 10 things that men who are abusive, they all kind of follow the same patterns. And, you know, one of them is that their self-esteem is so low, they're insecure about their worth as a provider, you know, as a husband, even as a sexual partner. So they're going to blame, you know, somebody else. They also do not believe that their behavior, their violent behavior or even emotionally abusive behavior is wrong. You know, they feel that, you know, they have a right to yell at somebody and put them down. It's just, you know, what they learned maybe when they were children. They have no sense of boundaries. They, you know, they may themselves have come from abusive households, so this is what they learned, you know, again, as a child. They have expectations of their spouses and their children that are unrealistic. They're also very unpredictable. They have confusing personalities. You never know from one second to the next, you know, how they're going to behave. And so that's very confusing to, you know, a woman who's in a household like that, you know, because you don't know, you know, the woman walks on eggshells because she's not sure, if I say this, will he be angry? Will he start in? And, you know, and it, so they really have a very difficult time functioning. So a lot of times they just withdraw themselves, and they become a shell of what they used to be before they, you know, were involved with this type of personality.
You know what I find, too, and this is from observing it for so many, four decades now or five, but when there is a community or a certain region of the U.S. or wherever you may be living, and almost everybody in that community was of one certain type, like profession or job or whatever, and they all kind of did the same thing. So in other words, their patterns, their lifestyle, their habits, and the way they did life is all the same. And let's say that was probably they grew up in the early 1900s, you know, and then they had kids, and their kids were born in maybe right after the war or right around then. Well, those kids were like, now going to school, don't forget. I mean, we always are talking about all this stuff, like you're going to click your fingers and it's going to be magic and domestic abuse will be gone. I mean, was so much worse just 100 years ago, you would have absolutely, it would boggle your mind to be able to understand how bad it was then, to be able to compare that to today. So if you look at it, you know, 100 years ago, they didn't have the education, they didn't know, and that was just the way it was in, you know, in certain areas. And these communities of people tended to live together and stay together, you know, families and stuff. So then if you look, you know, like I said, they had their kids, you know, they were after the war, those people started going to school. And then they may or may not have graduated high school and then had their kids in the 50s and 60s. And now those were the ones where, hey, college, that's a big deal. I can start getting loans. That's when loans came along, you know. And then now you look at it as now the I and the we generations, you know. It's all about me. It's all about myself. And, you know, everybody else is not important anymore. So it, gradually I really think we've made a significant difference since 100 years ago, but it's just that there are so many more people around us that we just see it more. You know, probably if you went to a little town where there were 200 people, you know, and they learned those lessons in the past 100 years, you probably wouldn't see it. You know, so really, you know, have we or have we not made those strides, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, you have to realize that the media now is out there and everything, you know, all you do is, you know, if you burp, it's going to be in the news.
Oh, this internet,
It's a lot. Yeah, you know, you can't do anything. Nobody could say anything. Look, you know, that father, I don't know if you saw that video on YouTube where the father shot the daughter's the computer. Because she was saying something, you know, things like that, they go viral real fast. You know, you see violence and talking violence and, of course, movies. It's a different world. It definitely is a different world than it was, you know, 100 years ago. But behaviors are passed down, and the cycle of abuse, you know, is passed on from generation to generation. You know, we are our parents, really. And, you know, we sound like them, you know, we use expressions that they've used. And I think that, you know, it's growing geometrically now. You know, there's so many more people than there were 100 years ago. And people are more violent just because of, I think, you know, media and what they read in the newspapers, what they see in the movies. And, you know, it's scary. It really is scary. There has to be, you know, some way to break the, you know, because children today look at this as their reality, you know, and, you know, look at the blockbuster movies. I saw a wonderful movie this weekend. It was called The Sessions, and it starred Helen Hunt. And it's just about a paraplegic who, you know, was getting some therapy and stuff. So it's a very, it's a lovely movie. But it was competing against, I don't know, you know, the, I forget it, Skyfall, the 007 movie, violence. My theater had 5 people in it, you know, and the other theaters had 2 theaters filled.
Right.
You know, people, you know, these blockbusters with violence and, you know, and this becomes the norm. This is what people expect. This is what they enjoy. They like the excitement. They like the thrill. And, you know, so they become desensitized to violence. They become desensitized to people's feelings and emotions so that, you know, another thing which I just want to bring up about children in violent homes is that when they're raised in a violent home, their brains are different than a regular child. You probably are aware of this, Doctor. Because they become hypersensitive, they also lose their ability to develop empathy and sensitivity because they don't see that. You know, it's in the frontal lobe, and you kind of have to learn it, and then it grows bigger and larger. And if a child doesn't see that in the home, their brain, you know, with these PET scans, are showing different brains than a child who wasn't raised in that kind of home. And it's harder to deal with a child who doesn't understand about empathy and sensitivity. You know, when I was working at an adolescent substance abuse facility, we had teenagers, and I, you know, I was doing a group, and one of the topics of the group was, you know, what do you do to have fun? And one of the kids said, oh, we go to the mall, and we stand, you know, we go up on the second floor, and we spit on people below us. And I said, and that's fun? She's, oh, yeah, we love it. Everybody is, you know, we watch them, we laugh. This is what they thought was fun. Is there no sensitivity or empathy for people who get the spittoon on them? You know, it shocked me because they didn't get understand or have that grasp of what it's like to be that person, you know. And this is what's missing with children who are raised in these kind of violent homes where they're not learning, you know, don't talk that way to somebody, don't treat somebody like that, you know, be nice and behave and, you know, and all those, you know, wonderful things that we hope a child learns. So it is pretty scary, and we the adults are responsible, you know, for the next generation. Mm-hmm. And if we, you know, we talk about the cycle continuing, if we want to break that cycle, we need to, as adults, know and understand, you know, what we need to do to help the kids.
Well, you know, I think it's about breaking the cycle, that's number one, but also the parents don't even have any, what we were saying before. Do the parents really have, I guess what I would call, have they really learned what it means to be human? And I think that's a very, very important question. They're like, yeah, well, whatever. And it's like, okay, have you learned what it means to get up every day and know what you should do, know what you shouldn't do, and be able to go out and reproduce that action for somebody else without having something else tied to it? So what really is human, you know? If someone asks you, could you please pick that up instead of walking over it, is that human, is it not, or is that abuse? You know, some people just want to be not so, they want to be, to take it to the other extreme. In other words, see, she's always picking on me. See, she always tells me to do something. And it's like, well, that's really what a human being does. That's not really always abuse, mm-hmm. you know. So, like,
right.
people don't even learn what it means anymore to be a human being.
Yeah. Well, you know, the parent, it takes a village, right, to raise
That's
a
right.
child. You know,
That's
teachers,
right.
you know, elders, you know, the grandparents, the parents, you know, siblings. I mean, everyone needs to be there for a child to give them support and give them, you know, the nurturing that they need so that they understand that, you know, this is what is a nice way of being and this is what is not a nice way of being. You know, you see bullies, you know, why
mm-hmm.
are these children bullying? And they're bullying, and, you know, I was doing some research on this actually. You know, the kids who are from a violent home, they think that if I don't hit, but
right.
I, you know, if I'm only, you know, if I'm taunting, that's not being violent. And so a bully may taunt, you know, while not even pushing and shoving and doing all physical stuff and not realize that that's actually the same thing. It's just a different form of it. So they learn that, you know, they see their dad talking to their mom or vice versa, you know, and belittling and putting them down and doing things that make, you know, the person feel bad, and then they do it themselves to somebody else. So, you know, it's just that they're not understanding, you know, what it really, like you say, what it means to be human and just to be, you know, cordial to another person so that you could live in peace and harmony. I mean, that's, you know, that's my goal. You know, I had a client. She was, I think she was about 80 years old, and her husband finally died. And I say finally. He finally died because she said that she was married to him for 60 years, and it was the worst 60 years of her life. She never left him. He was extremely emotionally abusive. And she says at 80 years old, she's living her life now. She became the president of an organization. She goes traveling with her girlfriends. It took her 80 years to live her life. I mean, that's no way
right.
to live, you know. So, you know, my goal, and I said to her, I'm glad you're experiencing peace now because that's a wonderful thing, and she's finally knowing what that feels like because all those years she never knew.
That's right. And a life is not always about time. A life is just a moment. It can be a moment, you know. So if she came
right.
to that, then when she dies, she could say, you know, I lived a good life. She did. You know, it was the end of it.
Exactly,
but she
yeah.
did. You know.
Yeah.
So it's all about sometimes just about that moment. Well, you know, we always talk about the holidays, and I can tell you some times that I know that holidays are just the pits if you have anybody that is any type of issues. It's sort of like it comes out of them. It ekes like there's no end. And, you know, I can tell that there were a few things. When you have a father, let's say he works 5-6 days a week and he's gone in the morning at 7, doesn't come home, you know, till 7 or 8 at night, and then he goes out again, or sometimes they don't come back home till 10. But then all of a sudden, you know, on a holiday, the bars are closed, you know, The gyms are closed. There's nowhere else for them to go, and they end up being on your feet and having to experience, you know, kids or an adult or somebody screaming or throwing toys. That can just escalate somebody's little edge to no end. I mean, so that is a huge, huge problem for people who have any issues with abuse in the house. Don't you find that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, it boils down to how do you cope? You know, people have coping skills, and what are their coping skills? Drinking alcohol to relax them, or, you know, going into, you know, some men may go into their cave and watch a football game, you know, so they're isolating themselves from the family, or they're shooting drugs, or they're arguing and fighting. You know, these are coping skills. They're not healthy coping skills, but they are coping skills. And what people need to understand is that if it's not, and I want to add also eat, you know, people just shovel food down them, you know, and eat a lot. So any of those or all of those are not healthy coping skills. And what a person needs to understand is that when they're feeling this frustration, when they're feeling this anxiety, when they're feeling this anger and stress and overwhelm, what else can they do besides what they're used to doing? You know, our behavior is so habitual. You know, it's like we're on automatic. You know, driving your car and you're thinking about, I have to go to the bank, I have to go to Publix, I have to go shopping here, and, you know, call this one, and then you miss your exit because you weren't even paying attention to driving. And that's because we are, on automatic, just doing what we're used to doing. Our behavior is like that as well. So immediately if you get that frustration or anxiety or anger or whatever it is you're feeling, that negative feeling, and you go for the bottle and you drink a bottle of, you know, or a case of beer, you know, and that's what you automatically do because you don't know that there are other options. And the other options, especially this time of year and any time of year when you're feeling this way, is what do you do, what do you enjoy doing that would be relaxing? So whether it's taking a nice hot bath, whether it's even going shopping, you know, and now's not the time of year to maybe do that, but, you know, window shopping or calling an old friend or reading a good book or listening to music or knitting or, you know, playing the piano or learning to speak Spanish. You know, you have to do some alternative things that you may or not, you know, not ordinarily think of. But, you know, I tell my clients, make a self-help toolkit. And by that I mean to write down 10 or 15 things that you could do in a moment when you're really feeling frustrated and, you know, you're going to, you know, eat that last candy bar and lose 20 pounds. So I say, instead of doing that, take your list out, and what do you have on the list that you could do as alternatives? And many times you have to go through 6 or 10 of those things before you finally say, I feel better.
Right.
So it's a self-help toolkit. It's just a way to cope better. It offers healthy coping skills, but you have to be prepared. You know, you can't just all of a sudden say, oh, God, what could I do besides drink or eat, you know, the ice cream? You have to know, you have to have it in front of you. And I tell people, put it on your refrigerator, put it in your car, put it in your pocket, put it in your pocketbook, you know. Just have this list with you at all times so that you know what to do, so that you could behave differently. And it will save you the frustration of feeling lousy after you do whatever it is you're doing that's unhealthy. And it also will help, you know, your family as well, because they'll see that you're not, you know, acting in a, you know, a negative manner, you know, and causing tension in the home.
Well, you know, we have about 10 more minutes left. And, you know, Amy, I think people really seriously do need to understand that, great, a lot of people can just drop it and say, I'm out of here, and go, and they're okay. But a lot of people, it is a process over days, months, or it could be years. So that's really important for people to not give up and say, it didn't work this time. I did all of her techniques. It didn't work. See, I'm right back in the same situation, blah. The answer is, if it doesn't work today, try it again tomorrow. Try it again the next day. Try it again next week. You know, when you say about the father coming home and wanting to sit in his room and watch games, you know what? Sometimes the best thing to do is isolation, you know. You may need to leave him in there and go and do something else because that may be the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work on yourself, you know. You say, okay, good. He wants to go in there. There's no sense in arguing about this, you know. What is my next step? And then work on your list instead of worrying about trying to fix them and their list, you know.
Right.
And so many times, you know, the kids, it's like, kids, go outside. You know, you don't want to go out without me, I'll go outside with you. You know, how many times do parents send kids outside? And it's like, maybe the mother needs to go outside too, you know, change it up a little. But I just, you know, people really need to understand it is not a quick fix. This is not something that's a quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said with that other woman, it can last decades.
Yeah, and you don't want to be caught up in that because that's a horrible way to live your life, you know, when you are in a relationship that's really difficult and, you know, and abusive, you know, because you wind up being a different person than you were before you started out. And you know, it's very hard to pick up the pieces. It's like, you know, it's like a block of ice that's chipped away over the years so that all you have left is a little ice cube. You know, instead of this big swan that's, you know, created,
you
become, you know, just a piece of yourself. And so many times I've heard women tell me, you know, I don't know who I am anymore. I don't even know what I used to like doing because they just don't, they haven't done it in so long. All they're doing is surviving, and that's no way to live. So, you know, I encourage, you know, anybody, if, you know, anybody who's listening, if they are, they think they're in an abusive relationship, you know, because, again, a lot of times it's very hard to identify or even admit that I am being abused. But if you think you are or know somebody who is, you know, there is a lot of help out there. There are certainly therapists. There are support groups. You know, there are, I mean, if you're to the point of leaving, you know, there are safe houses in your community. You could, you know, 411, I think, is the number of help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are a lot of resources. Certainly, you know, do what you can to, you know, take care of yourself because if you're not feeling good and you know, capable of caring for yourself, you cannot take care of your children or, you know, anybody else who depends on you. So, you know, people forget that they're number one. And I, you know I spoke a lot about women being abused. There are really a lot of men out there who are being abused. I had so many men in my men's support group who were with women who were very strong. You know, the difference between men and women, it's very interesting. If a man is being abused, it's usually verbal abuse. And women could have very strong, biting, you know, comments. You know, they're very good with words. If a woman is in an abusive relationship, yeah, the men also certainly could be, you know, but they're a little more vulgar, you know, when they'll curse, they'll use, you know, terrible words. But a woman will do it in a more, and this, of course, is generalities, you know, she'll do it in a little more subtle ways, but enough to make the man feel really lousy. And also there's a lot more fear involved in a woman who's being abused than a man because of the physical violence. You know, men are stronger and bigger, and when they get loud and noisy, you know, and, you know, tower over a woman, it's scary. So they live in a lot of, or they experience a lot of fear, while a man who's being abused may not have that same fear factor, but they still have a very low self-esteem. So it's a very different dynamic, but nevertheless, it's still no way to live. You know, my goal for all these people is peace in the home and how to create it and how to create it for yourself and for your children and any of, you know, anybody that you know who may be in this, you know, experiencing this. It's you know, there is a way to get out. You know, you just have to know that there is help out there and ask for it.
But then also, let's talk just, we have about 5 minutes left, about if you're a child or if you're a parent of children and you take your kids to back to the home you grew up in and then expose your kids again. So really, how do kids fit into all this and how are they getting help or not getting help?
Yeah, well, you know, there are, you know, there's play therapy for very young children. You know, there is therapy that an older child could experience. You know, when I used to run the substance abuse facility for teenagers, the reason why the kids were getting into drugs and alcohol was because their home life, they weren't getting what they needed. So they used to go for gangs, you know, support from their gangs or their peers, and drugs was an escape. You know, you want to create for your child the kind of home where they feel safe to talk to you about anything. So if your child, teenager, you know, is coming to you and saying, you know, I experiment with marijuana and, you know, I just want to let you know, you don't want to lose your mind and say how terrible they are and stupid and don't, you know, but rather give them, you know, an understanding ear so that the child feels safe that they're able to talk to their parents and they don't feel that they're going to be, you know, abused or isolated or reprimanded in any way. Children need to feel that their parents are there for them, that their parents love them no matter what. And what many parents wind up doing is they make the child feel like they are bad. And if a child feels bad, they're going to feel guilt and they're going to feel shame. And that's a very strong, very powerful feeling to have to live your life with. You know, just brings to mind, I went to a workshop and a 70-year-old man stood up at the workshop and he says, "I'm still looking for my mother's approval." And that his mother is long gone. You know, she's not even alive anymore. And he's still looking for his mother's approval. You know, if you have a child who's feeling shame and guilt, you know, you don't want them to live their life waiting for mom to say you were a good kid and I love you. Do it now. You know, understand that that's all the child needs and wants so that they won't go to their peers, they won't go looking for gangs, they won't go looking for drugs and alcohol, you know, to escape from the tension or the fear that they're experiencing at home. So it's a big responsibility, and a parent cannot do that unless they themselves feel safe and, you know, empowered enough to be able to use the, you know, appropriate skills, you know, on the for the child, you know, so that the child really believes it and understands it and knows that the parent is there for them. So,
But a child can speak out if they're experiencing that at home. They can find other ways to speak out. There are laws now in the states where doctors and dentists and chiropractors and, you know, any other kind of healthcare provider, it doesn't matter who they are, it is a law that if someone comes to you and tells you, you must report, period. It is not an option. So if you're a child and you're experiencing that, you can speak up to someone. And, you know, granted it starts a pretty, you know, stinky kind of course, but maybe that's just like the stinky laundry that needs to come out, you know, and then maybe that does help the family in the long run.
Well, it absolutely will. No child should have to go through that, especially when it's sexual abuse, you know. You know, how many children tell their parents that they're being abused by Uncle, you know, Seymour? And the parent doesn't believe it, you know. I think that if a child is saying something like that, you know, or, you know, that the parent needs to really listen and explore further, you know, because those are important accusations to not ignore. So a child, again, it's the parent that the child is coming to, you know, for the support, and if the parent is not giving it, then you know, definitely if a teacher hears about it or if a doctor hears about it or a therapist, we are obligated, absolutely, to report those kinds of accusations and, to, you know, to explore that further. Yeah, children are, you know, and again, the younger ones are obviously not going to know to do that, but certainly older ones, you know, should reach out to any adult who would listen.
Well, you do see it now. No matter who you are in healthcare, you do see what's going on with kids because kids are kind of hiding things, and you can, you know, if you're observant enough, something will set it off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you're laying back and you're having a fit, you know, if you're at the doctor's or, you know, and the mother's standing there and you say, "Well, I need to look at your arms," and they're both saying no, you know, you got an issue.
Right.
You know,
sure.
You have to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, even if you're suspicious, you have to mandate, you have to report it. That's part
correct.
Of the mandate, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is nationwide. So if anyone's listening, that is everywhere. You know, if you have something to say, you can say it. Like if you're a grandmother and you're bringing in a child to a you know, a healthcare provider or whatever, that could be another way too, because then that person is still mandated to say that. They're going to ask, you know, and they'll learn what they need to know.
Yeah. Yeah, children are helpless, you know. I mean, especially the young ones, they really, you know, are so helpless. And, you know, again, that shame is so significant in why a child may not even say something, you know, and we know that with all of the stuff in the news that's been recent with child, you know, sexual abuse stuff.
Right.
So, it's, you know, I want parents to know that to encourage their children before there's any incidents, you know, to let the kids know that if anybody or any, if they know of, you know, if anything has happened, that they should feel comfortable bringing it to their attention. If, you know, if anything is, you know, they're experiencing, you don't want to put words in the child's mouth, but if they are experiencing anything that's uncomfortable or they don't like, they should feel comfortable enough to talk to the, you know, the parent about it, because, you know, kids sometimes don't, and we don't want them to hide this, you know, this kind of stuff.
Well, Amy, we're at the end of the show. If you could please give us all of your contact information for yourself and for your sister, Rosalind Sadeka, and so people will be able to go to the websites and be able to find out some more tips and some books and be able to get help, and that you also do counseling. So if you could share with us about how that would happen.
Okay. First off, the anger management program is on www.onlineparentingprograms.com. The dating relationship programs are on womendatingrescue.com, and there's also womendatingafter40.com, which has another program. One of them is an e-course. The other one is a book with a wonderful programs to help empower you to get you prepared for positive, healthy dating relationships. You can contact me at info@womendatingrescue.com. If anybody wants any coaching, I do have, if you go to my website, there's my baby boomer website is yourbabyboomersnetwork.com. Sign up for my newsletter. It does focus on the baby boomers, but what I have done over the past 5 years of writing newsletters is the information is for anybody and everybody. I mean, my daughter, who's 30 years old, reads all the stuff and finds it very apropos. So if anybody wants to sign up for the newsletter, you will get very valuable, insightful information on how just to function and cope and, really develop yourself so that you'll have, with insights and awareness, you could be the person that you've always wanted to be. So it's very empowering. And that's at yourbabyboomersnetwork.com. And I do provide coaching if anyone is interested. Info@womendatingrescue.com. You could reach me. And I guess that's it.
Great. Well, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today. You know, as so many people just have to listen and keep listening and keep listening to things like this, like this show. You know, the more you listen to it, something will always click in your head and you'll say, I didn't think of that, or maybe I should call her, or maybe I'll just look at the website, or I didn't really realize that that was a problem, or maybe I should be looking at the people around me. So I really think that the more people are able to play this show as it's archived will really help a lot of other people. So I'd like to thank you for being with us today. It was a really pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Dr. Jeanette.
Thanks. And if you'd like more information about Amy, you can play her link is on the show description for today's show. And if you'd like to know more information from me, my website is outoftheboxhealthcare.com. And you can always email me directly through the Contact Us page there. And until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and thank you so much for being with us today.